Texas, New York Stock Exchange. Mr. Clinton?
May it please the court, this case presents a very simple issue. The complaint was filed in the state court to address the question of whether, basically, a New York lawyer can handle an arbitration proceeding.
You know, I don't understand how you have standing to complain about the lawyer or non-lawyer or non-admitted lawyer or what have you of your opponent.
Well, plaintiff contends she has standing because there's a different playing field, different set of rules applied to the out-of-state lawyer than would apply if it's an in-state lawyer. It's a different
like what?
Regulatory scheme. Well, in the hearing, the attorney for the respondent seemed to do some things like vouch for the credibility of witnesses. He seemed to, in some cases, testify, offer testimony, things that aren't permitted here in Illinois. I don't know if they're permitted in New York.
What do you mean permitted in Illinois?
I don't think a lawyer can...
Does Illinois regulate procedures in arbitration?
Illinois regulates the practice of law in this state, and I believe I believe that Illinois does have the right to determine whether or not a state lawyer can practice law.
Did the defendant have to have a lawyer in the arbitration?
I believe the defendant did, yes.
Did he have to? Was he required? Was it required to?
I'm not sure under the New York Stock Exchange rules. I don't know. I think that once the defendant picked a lawyer...
What the paradox is, defendants aren't required to have lawyers. Maybe an institution is, I don't know. But, I mean, ordinarily, you'd be delighted if your opponent didn't have local counsel. Odd.
In what way does it seem odd? Is it that, I mean, we're just saying that the plaintiff in the arbitration is entitled to a level playing field, and Illinois is entitled to determine, you know, who practices law in this state. That's what the bar exam is all about. That's what it appears that the statute's all about.
Do you think you were required to have a lawyer in this arbitration? Your client, I mean?
No, she's not required to have a lawyer.
She's not required to have a lawyer, but the defendant is required to have an Illinois lawyer. Is that your argument?
My argument, yes, because the defendant
can't
a corporation that can't appear. Yes, it does, because the defendant's a corporation. Corporation can't appear pro se in Illinois. That's clear. It's been in the statute for a long time. That's the rules.
Does that apply to arbitration?
I believe it does, yes. It should.
How are you harmed by the fact that the New York Stock Exchange didn't have an Illinois lawyer?
Lawyer vouched for the credibility of witnesses and seemed to proffer testimony where his own witnesses couldn't make up the factual testimony. He seemed to offer factual assertions to make up the gaps in the factual proof.
Did you object?
Yes, we did. Also, before the hearing, we did speak with the counsel for the respondent, and he said he was going to be assisted by an attorney from the local office of Bernstein, so we assumed he would have local counsel. We didn't learn until the hearing started that there was no local counsel.
How would that have helped you?
It would appear to me that if he had local counsel, then the local counsel was a lawyer. The local counsel would have been admitted under the Illinois rules, and I would have taken care of this problem.
How would he have taken care of the problem? If the New York lawyer insisted on vouching for, you know, witnesses and so forth, what good would it do that a local lawyer is sitting at the counsel table?
Local lawyer is subject to the discipline of
he's
the
not doing anything bad.
He's the lawyer.
He's sitting there.
He's the lawyer then. I think he'd be there, he'd be part of the proceeding. The company would have an attorney in Illinois. I think that our objection would be moot.
Okay, thank you. I don't want to take more of your time.
Okay, well, it's a pretty simple case. Complaints filed, requests to admit are served, defendants apparently thought that the request to admit would say that there was more than 75,000 in dispute. The answer's come back denied.
Are you planning, if you succeed in this appeal, are you planning to seek a new arbitration?
No, we are not.
You're just up here for your $4,800?
That's correct. That's correct. That's what the case is about. That's what it's been about since the beginning. The purpose of the answers to the request to admit was to follow what the Supreme Court said in 1938, that the plaintiff can prevent removal by committing to accept less than the federal jurisdictional minimum. That was our purpose in doing that, to keep the case in the forum where a decision could be meaningful to the plaintiff, where the Illinois court could decide whether to follow California, which has ruled in a virtually identical case in favor of the position of my client, or to take the other state's position. That's all it is, to keep the case in the correct forum. So the case is removed after there's a, then, well, let me step back. Requests to admit are answered, defendants move to overrule the answers because they didn't like them. They argue this motion in the state court, and the state court issues an opinion holding that there's federal diversity jurisdiction. The case has been removed 7 days later. We didn't think that the state court had any ability to decide whether this court, whether the district court had jurisdiction, so we sent a letter to defense counsel. We then filed a motion to stay the proceedings the very next day in the federal court because of the problem of the obvious jurisdictional problem that was prevented. So we said, let's stop this case now, sort out whether there's jurisdiction, then we'll move forward if you find there's jurisdiction. The defendants vigorously fought that. Paragraph 1 of their notice of removal says they're removing on the basis of that state court order. There was no basis for this removal. Once there was no basis for the defendants to remove a case on the basis of the order issued by the state court. That pretty much covers my issues.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Clinton. Mr. Rumo?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Mike Rommel, and I'm arguing today on behalf of both defendant appellees, the New York Stock Exchange, and also Sanford C. Bernstein and Company. Just to initially to address a couple of the comments that counsel made, first of all, we've argued in the state court, Your Honor, that the plaintiff has no standing to complain about a lawyer of her opponent. Just so you will know that we don't believe this whole issue of the unauthorized practice of law is relevant at all to whether or not Judge Aspin abused his discretion in not awarding attorney's fees. However, the posture of that case in the state court is that the state trial court did dismiss the case, and now it's up on appeal in the First District Illinois Appellate Court. Also to clarify, none of the parties had to have a lawyer in these proceedings. They could have represented themselves under the New York Stock Exchange rules, and therefore counsel is incorrect when he says that any of the parties needed to have an attorney present. Opposing counsel said today for the first time that his client was not seeking a re-arbitration of this case. Your Honors, we crossed every T and dotted every I to remove this case by filing the required request for admissions under Rule 81.2, local rule. We followed 28 U.S.C. 1446 in trying to determine what the amount in controversy was, and plaintiff continually evaded these questions when the request for admission were served. We were therefore forced to file a motion in the state court to try to get clarification, and we objected to her evasive responses, and what the trial judge did in that venue was that he made a finding, a factual finding, that there was $241,858 in dispute during the arbitration proceeding. We did not rely on any dicta or holding or statement in the state court judge's opinion that in his opinion there was diversity jurisdiction. We know that the state court cannot determine the jurisdiction of the federal courts. However, We needed to file those interrogatories. We needed to file that motion, request for admission, rather. We needed to take all these steps in order to try to determine what the amount in controversy was, because plaintiff's complaint had no request for monetary relief, no ad damnum clause, which had a request for relief. So it was unclear what the amount in controversy was. We also relied, Your Honors, on the cases from other jurisdictions. Neither the Seventh Circuit nor any of the Northern District Court cases have ruled on whether the amount in controversy is the amount that was claimed in the underlying arbitration. And what Judge Aspin did was, when he was ruling on plaintiff's petition for attorney's fees, he very clearly said that even though he disagreed with our argument, because he looked at some other cases and he analyzed it a different way, he said that we definitely had a legitimate concern that if this case was going to be re-arbitrated, which plaintiff never would say in the state court when we filed these requests, that it was a legitimate concern and that he saw some merit in our position. Because let's look at the practical effect, Your Honors. We would have to relitigate this. We could have to relitigate this case for $241,858 if plaintiff chose to do so, and we'd be right back into arbitration when we went for over a year with this arbitration proceeding that she filed against Bernstein and with the other defendant. So what Judge Aspin did was not an abuse of discretion. In his ruling on the attorney's fees petition, he looked at the propriety of our removal about a removal petition, how we had to go about it, what we had to do. He recognized that. He recognized his legitimate concern as far as what the risks were to us, and he said that because there was a substantial jurisdictional question, which this court, Your Honors, has never addressed, he followed the other cases in the Northern District where the judges have said that if there's a substantial jurisdictional question or a complex jurisdictional question, that attorney's fees will normally and routinely not be awarded. And that's all that Judge Aspin did, and he wrote a very well-reasoned decision. This was not your typical district court judge who writes a one-liner and says attorney's fees denied. He wrote a very thoughtful opinion. He cited cases. He understood what the issues were and what the frustrations were of the defendants in the court below. So basically, there's no basis here to conclude that the district court abused its discretion. They required that the attorney's fee issue be fully briefed. We did brief that issue, and the judge accordingly ruled with a memorandum opinion, and we would say that opinion should be affirmed. One last thing I would like to raise is the issue of the untimeliness of plaintiff's appeal regarding the sanctions issue. In essence, Your Honor, there was no appeal taken on Judge Aspin's ruling on plaintiff's motion for sanctions. I won't waste your time with relating the facts because they're very clearly stated in the briefs as far as the dates and what happened. But in essence, what happened here is that Judge Aspin ruled on sanctions after the merits of this case were taken care of. The case had already been remanded back to the state court. Plaintiff never filed a notice of appeal on that particular order. She waited until after a separate ruling was issued on the attorney's fees denial. She filed a notice of appeal, and in her notice of appeal, she clearly states that she is only appealing the attorney's fees denial and the judge's August 1st, 2002 order. There's no mention whatsoever of the sanctions order. And this is clearly fatal to her case based on the Federal Rules of Appellate Procedure 4A1 and the Federal Rule of Appellate Procedure 3C1B.
But I thought that's what he's seeking, attorney's fees.
Yes, Your Honor, but there were two orders here. He's seeking a reversal of Judge Aspin's denial of attorney's fees, which was a separate memorandum opinion and order which was entered after the motion for sanctions was denied, and that was never appealed within the 30-day time limit. So yes, plaintiff is seeking to overturn Judge Aspin's denial of her attorney's fees. She's also claiming, which the first time was in her appellate brief, that the sanctions ruling should also be overturned. However, she never filed an appeal.
Between them, I mean, aren't the attorney's fees being sought as a sanction for the removal?
That's not how her motion was presented. I mean, she's claiming sanctions under Rule 11.
The attorney's fees are for what?
The attorney's fees are for her costs, expenses, and fees for having to address the removal issue when it was remanded back. She's claiming that because it was remanded, basically what her argument is because it was remanded, we must be wrong and she must be right, and she shouldn't have to incur the cost of having to go into court and ask for a removal back to the remand back to the state court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks. Mr. Clinton?
Two comments. I mean, the request, I'll just read the request for admission number 4. There is more than $75,000 exclusive of interest and cost at stake in the above caption lawsuit. Denied. That really, I mean, that was a clear signal, as clear as anyone can be, that there was no jurisdiction over this case. And the removal petition was filed. My letter went out very shortly thereafter. Quickly, a motion to stay was filed, alerting the defendants of the problem with removing a case based on the state court opinion. They say they've essentially reinvented their reason for removing. I would direct the court to paragraph 1 of their removal petition, which states they removed it on the basis of the state court order, and it reveals no other basis for the removal. It doesn't talk about the request to admit, doesn't talk about plaintiff allegedly being evasive, nothing else. Just deals with that order.
Now, are you seeking sanctions different from your attorney's fees, or what?
No, the sanctions, it's the same exact
thing. What are you seeking in attorney's fees, or what did you ask for?
It's a few thousand dollars. It's a few thousand dollars to brief the motion to remand. That's all it is. The issue with regarding the jurisdiction that counsel has raised this issue previously. He filed 2 briefs in this court. The court stayed the briefing on the appeal. Counsel's arguments were rejected because they are flatly contrary to precedents of this court and a precedent of the United States Supreme Court. Basically, an order was setting a briefing schedule. Counsel said that we should have then appealed that order to this court, the sanctions issue, but that was a final judgment. The briefing schedule was a final judgment. We should then have appealed that to this court and then filed yet another appeal for the remand issue 2 months later. It's just flatly contrary to cases of this court. Thank you.
Thank you, Clinton. Our thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.